We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hi, friends. I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. Today, I'm chatting with Aaron Dollar, the owner of Cotton and Flax. Aaron is an artist and textile designer focused on creating home goods and bold surface pattern designs. Her background as a printmaker guides her work for Cotton and Flax, and the entire collection of home goods are designed, silkscreen printed, and sewn in California. On today's episode, we're talking about how Aaron licensed her artwork for a line of fabrics manufactured by Robert Kaufman. She'll share her story of how this licensing partnership came to be, considerations when partnering with other brands, and things she learned along the way. Hey, Aaron, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk with you.
I'm thrilled to talk with you as well, because I think it'll be really fun for our audience to hear from somebody that also has a different business model and a different type of product. So thank you for making the time.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited.
So tell us about Cotton and Flax. What types of products do you sell?
So Cotton and Flax is really, at its core, kind of a home decor company. And I create hand-printed, hand-silkscreen printed textiles. So I'm printing by hand onto fabrics, my original designs. And then I use those fabrics to create things for people's homes, like pillows, tea towels, coasters, things like that. I also have some gift products like keychains and notebooks that I work with another company to create, all sorts of things that are all covered in my pattern designs. So it's really kind of focused on that.
Nice.
Design side, but also just sort of things for people's homes that are really minimalist and sort of focused on really nice natural materials. It's all kind of rooted in my own kind of aesthetic perspective, if that makes sense.
It does. It totally does.
My preference for minimalist living. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, what motivated you to start this business? Can you tell us a little bit about your career path?
Yeah, absolutely. So Cotton and Flax was sort of a weird experiment that got out of control. It was almost completely accidental. I think really what happened was I was working as a fine artist. I had studied printmaking in college, graduated in 2008, so recession moments, not great, not a great time to be entering the workforce. And I was already kind of scrapping together a living. I was working part-time jobs and, you know, in my spare time, I was helping to run this cooperative printmaking studio in Portland where I was living at the time. And I was creating a lot of fine artworks that I would sell through the gallery that was part of the studio there and in different galleries around town. And, you know, I just started my Etsy shop not too long after that and was selling work online. And, you know, I think just as part of my creative growth, I thought, you know, I really want to start printing on fabrics. I think this would be really fun to try. I'd been experimenting a lot more with silkscreen printing, and I wanted to see how my artwork would look on fabric. It's something I hadn't been able to really do before. This was, you know, I can't say for sure if it was before Spoonflower was around, but it was kind of pre the internet age of being able to just upload your design and have it custom printed on demand. Those services really weren't around yet. And so this was just purely my own interest in having fabrics with my designs on them. I started to print them myself in the studio and I was getting a lot of really positive feedback. I was taking these little experimental fabrics and things that I would sew with them, like pillows or tea towels, to craft fairs that I was already going to with my fine artworks, and people loved them. And it was just so encouraging and exciting to get that feedback really early.
Oh, yeah.
And I just kind of kept following that creative path of, you know, I'm really interested in this. It's fun. It's a different way to kind of experience my artwork in people's homes and to kind of have a new perspective on what my creative work could look like. And as I kept kind of following that path, I realized that it would probably be a little bit more effective if I had a little bit of a rebrand and to kind of set those textile projects apart from my fine artworks. And so I, you know, brainstormed for a while for a business name, and that's kind of how Cotton and Flax began. I wanted to really root the company in the natural materials that I preferred to use, cotton and flax being the plants that linen and cotton are grown from.
Right.
And yeah, it just kind of grew from there as I you know, continued to put that stuff out there on my own website and on Etsy and at craft fairs, and then eventually at trade shows. The business has just continued to grow, and now it's a really healthy sort of e-commerce and wholesale brand.
I love it. I had to chuckle when you talked about naming Cotton and Flax and coming up with the rebrand, because I think that naming a business is probably one of the most hardest parts about starting for so many of my clients, and even for myself, you know,
Yeah, it's such a like navel-gazy sort of process.
Yes.
Because part of the reason I really wanted to rebrand was it felt strange to just sort of have my artworks and then this sort of textile company also kind of lumped in. They really felt like two separate entities. And so thinking about what would I be able to stand hearing over and over again?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a tricky process for
it
sure.
It totally is. Well, you recently released a new line of fabrics that was a collaboration with Robert Kaufman. And so this was a licensing deal, is that correct?
Yeah.
How did this collection come about?
So, I mean, to be completely honest, it was something I pitched to them.
Okay.
So, you know, it's definitely been a process of kind of getting to know people at that company and then realizing that there really is a demand for fabric that has my style of work on it.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason that I was already in touch with Robert Kaufman is that I would buy fabrics wholesale from them to create work for Cotton and Flax. So
gotcha.
I already had kind of a working relationship with people at that company. You know, I knew some of the sales reps because I had, you know, emailed or called with them. And I knew a couple of people in marketing just because I'd had a chance to meet them over the years. And, you know, it was one of those things where it was really just good timing. I was reaching a point with Cotton and Flax where I was getting more and more demand for fabric by the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And my studio in LA, where I was at the time, it, you know, it was 175 square feet. It's tiny, tiny little room. And so it wasn't feasible for me to make fabric by the yard for my customers, even though I was getting, you know, requests practically weekly for this.
Wow.
It was just not something that I could create myself at a price point that people, well, that I think most people would want to pay for it. I mean, I love my fabrics, but I'm not sure that I would pay $120 a yard for them. That's really not in my budget. So I wanted to explore working with manufacturers who, you know, have that expertise, have that ability to scale up and really create a quality product, but without having to do it all myself.
Smart.
And so the first people I looked to were Robert Kaufman, because I already trusted their ability to make a quality product. I already knew that they have really ethical manufacturing processes. I know that the people who work there really care about people who are sewing with their fabrics, and they have great customer service. And so it was just kind of a no-brainer that I would put together a little collection of patterns for them and then pitch the idea. And, you know, I was really lucky that, you know, first pitch, first time, it was a yes. So I, you know, I feel beyond lucky that that was just right time, right place, right client, and that they really understood my vision for the project.
It's fun to hear you talk about the reasons you were drawn to this business too, you know, how they treat their employees and how they manufacture their products. It sounds to me like that was very much in line with your core values as a business for Cotton and Flax.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I know that this is something that a lot of people who run businesses like mine really struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
If you're manufacturing things, you know, by hand or in other, you know, sort of carefully considered ethical ways, it can be really stressful to think about partnering with larger companies to create work or to license your work. And that was something that, you know, you have to do that research. You have to look into, you know, whatever your ethical concern might be, whether it's, you know, I want something to be made in America, I want something to be free of, you know, child labor, I want to make sure that the people who work for this company are compensated properly and that the artists that they work with are compensated properly. Like, there's all different types of considerations
to
think about. And, you know, luckily Robert Kaufman hit all of the things that were important to me.
That's awesome.
While the fabric isn't actually milled in America, the printing is done here, which I'm just so excited that we were able to find local partners for the printing process. That's really rare these days.
Yeah, that's amazing. So let's back up a little bit and talk about the pitch. I was just having a conversation with somebody else in my industry about the power of the pitch and how there seems to be a lot of people that make a pitch, but they're not being clear in their ask. They're not explaining why it would be valuable for the company that they're emailing to work with them. They're not, the pitch isn't formulated very well. And to hear you say, and that's not a criticism, but I do think the clearer we can be, the more concise we can be, and the more we can look at it from somebody else's standpoint and their viewpoint, the better the response is going to be, right? Like, hopefully we'll get a response that we want to hear. So when you were reaching out to them, how did you craft that pitch? What did you ask them or tell them to help?
No, I hear what you're saying. I think that the thing that people forget is there's so many different considerations when you're putting together a pitch like this. So for example, with the pitch that I did for Robert Kaufman, it's beyond just what the designs of my patterns are going to look like. Right. They're thinking about, is there demand for fabric that's made by me? Is there a demand for my brand? Is there a demand for this type of design in the quilting world as it stands now? Or is this something that people don't know that they want yet?
Right.
They're thinking about that saleability, but they're also thinking about the strength of the brand of the person pitching. And mm-hmm. so luckily, you know, I had this sales data to kind of back up, oh, there is a demand for this. I'm being asked on a regular basis about this. I've been in business for multiple years. It wasn't like I was coming to them as like a fresh out of art school, you know, student. I really had that background with my current business to kind mm-hmm. of back up that sales demand. But beyond that, I think that they are looking for partners who really get their core demographic, because mm-hmm. ultimately you have to consider when you're making a pitch to any company, who are their customers?
Yep.
Because you can't just think about, oh, this brand is going to be my new customer. You have to think about their end use customers and how you'll be able to serve them. And so thinking about the ways that I could craft a pitch that would be appealing to their end use customer was really important. And so that means kind of creating mock-ups with the type of projects in mind that those people might be sewing with my work, thinking about how we could work on marketing together and how I might be able to give them a little bit of an edge through my existing audience. All of that stuff goes beyond just the designs that I'm presenting to them.
Yeah, of course.
And makes me appealing as like a potential partner to work with. It's all about those partnerships. I feel like it really, you know, it can't be just that. It can't just be, oh, I have a million followers on such and such platform.
Right.
It has to be, you know, a blend of the strength of your work and your ability to kind of get that message across in an effective way.
I love how you talked about it being a mutually beneficial thing, that it needs to be a true partnership. I think a lot of people approach pitches as, I want to sell you this, or I want you to work with me on this. You know, like they kind of come at it from their own point of view without necessarily taking into consideration the viewpoint of the other person or the other company. And I love how you articulated that, because it's clear that you put a lot of thought into how to show them the value of working with you and why it would be beneficial for them.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I think that in my mind, it's really like taking the long view, right? Because mm-hmm. ultimately, I don't want to work with a company just once. I'd love to license to them again and again and more collections together or have more opportunities to collaborate. And for that to happen, the products that they're making with your work need to sell. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, you both have the same goal, which is to create something that's marketable and beautiful, or, you know, will appeal to that demographic that you both want to reach. Mm-hmm. And so it's really about that partnership. It's not sort of what can I get out of it? It's how can we work together to have a successful collaboration?
Yes, I love that. I completely agree. So what are some things that people should consider when they're collaborating with a larger company? And they're coming from a place like you and I that's smaller, independent.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's been a real learning process for me. This is my first foray into doing quilting or kind of craft level fabric collaborations. And it's definitely the biggest company that I've done licensing for. So I learned a lot in the process of working with Robert Kaufman, but I also learned a lot in working with the smaller companies that I've licensed to. So mm-hmm. I feel like it's definitely, the process can be really similar, and lots of different companies will offer different kind of paths to do those types of licensing deals. Mm-hmm. For example, one of the smaller companies that I've worked with to do licensing was Scout Books up in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
And they invited me to submit some pattern designs that they would print onto notebooks and add to their sort of e-commerce shop that they were developing. And it was kind of more of a back and forth than my process with Robert Kaufman. With Robert Kaufman, I really kind of gave them a selection of designs to choose from, and then they chose, and then we went through the colorway process. It was very kind of straightforward. But with Scout books, there were like some revisions and kind of going back and forth about what would be most effective at that, at the size of the notebooks that they're creating. And so sometimes it's going to be a little more hands-on than others in the design process.
Yeah.
But the thing to me that seems most important to really keep in mind when you're working with a larger company is to get the contract stuff really hashed out as early in the process as possible. Mm-hmm. And if you don't feel comfortable looking over legal documents and really feel like you can understand those documents, get someone to help you. Find either a professional, like a lawyer, who can kind of go over this stuff with you. Or if you have someone, you know, maybe on your friend or family network that could go over it with you to make sure you understand what your like long-term commitments are or what to expect. That is so vital, because there's definitely moments where, you know, I went over my contract with a fine-tooth comb, but there's always little moments where you're like, oh, wait, how does this work again? I better go back and review this.
Right.
There's so much information that's contained in most of these contracts that, especially for long-term licensing projects, you really want to be able to have a sense of what things are going to look like, you know, 2 months out, 3 months out, a year out, kind of get a sense of what to expect from that partnership, because you don't really want to have any, you know, negative surprises. Positive surprises are always great, but
true.
Yeah. You want to avoid any kind of, you know, opportunities for you to miss out or to, you know, not live up to your side of what you're signing up for. So that's a pretty important part of the process.
Do you have any red flags when it comes to those contracts? Like, are there any things that you've seen where you're like, no, that would make me say no to this deal?
I mean, and that's really different for everyone. I know that some people are fine with signing over the copyright to their work, and mm-hmm. they're happy to do that for a flat fee. For me, I'm trying to build a brand that's really focused around my style of creating patterns. And so I really do prefer to go the licensing route.
Right.
And, you know, so for me, I'm really looking at, you know, the length of a contract, holding on to that copyright for myself. I don't really generally want to sign that over to somebody else. Keeping an eye on different uses that they can use your artwork for. And of course, the compensation agreement. That's probably the one that most people would, of course, be on the lookout for, because you want to know how much you're going to get paid. But there's always, you know, you want to go over that part and kind of get a sense of, am I getting an advance? You know, is there a point where they're no longer going to be using this work and we are going to, you know, go ahead and be done with this agreement overall? You kind of want to get a sense of all of those different moving parts so that you're not expecting income from a project that, you know, has a finite end date.
Right.
Those types of considerations are probably the ones that I would pay the closest attention to. Of course, if you know someone who's worked with this company in the past, that's always great to, you know, connect with them and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about partnering with this company. I'd love to hear your experience of working with them. I think especially in the art and design community, people are usually really happy to share their experiences. And, you know, maybe they won't feel comfortable sharing how much they're being paid, because that can be kind of variable and negotiable depending on your, you know, different rates that you're going to charge. But I think that usually if someone's had a bad experience, they'll be happy to say, watch out for this. This is something you really want to make sure you have in writing, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean you don't want to work with a company. It just means you'll have a little bit more information to keep yourself protected.
Right. You'll want to pay attention to those details.
Yeah.
Speaking of compensation, and I'm not going to ask you for specific numbers, but I do want to share for our audience that, you know, every licensing deal is very different. It's negotiated on an individual basis, and there's a few different ways that you could be paid or you could be compensated for your licensing projects. So can you kind of walk people through like flat rate versus royalties versus other ways that people are compensated for licensing?
Sure. Yeah. And so, you know, I can speak a little bit to like textile design or fabric mm-hmm. design, because that's what I've just gone through. So, you know, without getting into the rates,
of course,
generally when you pay or when you're paid a flat fee for a design, they'll just buy that one design outright. The company owns the copyright and they might pay you, say, you know, $600 to $800 for a design. And then that's, you know, at their discretion, what products they want to put that on, how much they're going to use it. You'll mm-hmm. kind of sign away your rights to that design. And for some people, that model works really well because they get that flat rate. They get paid that no matter how well the product sells. And so they're mm-hmm. happy to collect that fee. Licensing is a little bit different. So for fabric deals, you generally are paid by the yard that's either printed or by the yard that's sold.
Okay.
And so that tends to be a much lower royalty upfront potentially, but over time, if it sells well, that can be a really lucrative way to do business because that means if there's a demand for your product, you'll continue to be paid beyond that amount that you would have received as a flat fee. Mm-hmm. Plus, you retain the rights to your work and you can use it in other industries or keep it in your portfolio and be able to use it for other projects. So for me, that's been the way to go so far. But there's definitely pros and cons to both ways.
Absolutely.
And of course, there's always, you know, everything with licensing is generally pretty negotiable. You can negotiate for a higher rate per yard if you feel like there's a lot of demand or if you feel like you have enough credentials to demand that higher rate. You can ask for an advance on the royalties, and that can be really helpful to kind of bridge the gap between selling your work outright and licensing. You kind of get that upfront payment, but then hopefully you'll get residual payments as time goes on. There's a lot of different ways to handle it. And I'm, you know, I wouldn't consider myself necessarily an expert because I have just a handful of times that I've done this type of deal. There's definitely people who are only doing licensing. Mm-hmm. But in my experience, I think that licensing has been a way for me to really grow my brand beyond my own product line while holding on to the rights to my work to be able to use in other ways.
Yeah, I think my question was, that was so helpful. Thank you for sharing that.
I hope I answered your question.
You did. And I feel like I put you on the spot, but my intent was really just to show that everything is negotiable, as you said, and there's different structures for it. You know, you can do the flat fee, you can do the royalties, and it's the same way in the paper world as well. But I guess my point was just to ask or to point out that everything's negotiable and it's important to know what you're signing. So it goes back to that contract discussion we had and to speak up for yourself too, to be your own advocate as you approach these things. And if you're not comfortable with what's in the agreement, you know, ask for more of what you want or, you know, don't be afraid to speak up.
Absolutely. And I think that that's the thing is like, especially as I was just getting started in licensing, it felt very intimidating to ask for more money or to try to negotiate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's just a matter of empowering yourself, going and looking at the name of that handbook, the Ethical Pricing Guidelines Handbook for Designers is actually a really great resource to go and look through for licensing information for different industries. It gives you just kind of tables of lists. You know, if for the stationery industry, this is the common licensing fee for this many, mm-hmm. you know, products produced. And you can kind of go through and say, oh, okay, I'm looking at textiles, I'm looking at stationery, I'm looking at home decor, I'm looking at fashion, I'm looking at, you know, all these different industries and kind of get a sense of what your rates should be.
Yeah.
But that also can kind of be a way to empower yourself and say, you know, you've offered me this much in the contract. I'd really like to see maybe a bump up to this level, or could we try this for this first licensing deal, but maybe on the second try, could we mm-hmm. go up to a higher number? You know, I think that there's definitely ways to navigate that process. And, you know, the conversation might be uncomfortable, but it's just business. It's nothing.
It's not personal.
A reflection on your worth. It's not a reflection on anything beyond the company's bottom line and what they're trying to get done with their deal. So
totally. I agree with you. Let's talk a little bit about marketing. You know, when you're working with another brand, you're co-marketing the product essentially. So how does brand strategy play into all this?
Well, I think it's kind of great because you get to partner with somebody. And so you basically get double the
exposure.
Double the exposure. It's a great way to kind of reach a new demographic while also having, you know, the marketing budget of two businesses rather than just one behind a product, which mm-hmm. is really nice. One of the things that I think is important to kind of talk about is what their plan would normally be for a product like the one you're creating together. Definitely asking about timetables for when they want you to promote a product. I think that that can definitely be you know, some companies really don't want you to show sneak peeks, some really do.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be really variable. But the thing to consider is just really how it can fit into, if you're like me and you have a product business already, kind of timing those releases so that they're not conflicting necessarily with the product that you're trying to launch,
right.
Or, you know, really thinking about how your time will be best served and what's kind of strategically most important to be promoting at any given time. I think what's nice about the fabric line for me is that I'm able to kind of promote it all year. Mm-hmm. It's not a sort of seasonal product that's only good in the spring or the fall or,
right.
You know, whatever it might be. Something that I can kind of plug in as I have time available to share with people kind of what's being made with my fabric and remind people where they can find it in different fabric stores. So in some ways, the licensing stuff is really a good complement to running a product-based business, because when you don't have a new product to launch, you have this other set of licensed products that you can also continue to promote and kind of push people towards, even if you're not like, this is new.
Right, exactly.
I hope that makes sense. Yeah,
it totally makes sense. And too, you know, this is something I love to hear, is the diversification of revenue. So mm-hmm. even outside of new releases, you know, you've got this money coming in, and mm-hmm. and it's already produced. It's already out in the world. You just need to keep reminding people that it's there.
Right, exactly. And that's been so important to me as I've grown from, you know, selling just fine artworks. I think the diversification of income is something that's really helped me to feel more confident in my ability to be self-employed. I think when you're running a, you know, just an online retail e-commerce shop, it can be really stressful, especially in those early months of the year, right after Christmas, where you're like, wow, that was really great. Oh, but now what? It's like crickets.
Right.
And you're coming up on tax time and you're feeling stressed. And, you know, then kind of adding the wholesale component in can kind of be a little bit of a boost for that. But then beyond that, I've also been doing teaching and kind of educational stuff around workshops and online education. It's also been another way for me to continue to have another income stream that's coming in as I'm kind of developing new products and things like that. So
it's
really been kind of a ongoing, okay, what other kind of eggs can I add to my basket without feeling overwhelmed?
And following your passion too, like what excites you that you can work on. So,
oh, absolutely. And I think that's one of the best things about being self-employed is I kind of get to follow my interest in that way.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm feeling burnt out or bored with, you know, product development or product design, I can kind of say, okay, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to do some research about what stores might be good to carry my work and do some outreach there. Or I can work on developing a new class that I could teach in, you know, my community. Or, you know, there's all these different things that I can kind of go, okay, I'm going to go and work on this part of the business now. And it's all interconnected and it's all kind of around my interests and my skills and my particular passion, but it's sort of scratches the itch of different parts of my brain.
Right. No, that
that's
makes
probably not the most beautiful way to like put it, but I think that kind of being able to kind of juggle different things actually really keeps me interested. I think that, mm-hmm. you know, everyone's different, but for me, that's kept the business feeling really fresh.
Fantastic. Is there anything you'd do differently next time if you were to be doing more fabric licensing?
That's tough. I mean, I think that the things that I wish that I had known before I did this first launch, I wish that I'd had more time to put together a lookbook for this collection. The company definitely did a great job creating sample products and taking beautiful photos of those samples. But it was definitely something where if I'd had the time to use my sample yardage to create a few new products on my own that I could kind of offer as examples for how to use these fabrics, that would have been amazing. I think it really came down to the timing for me. I didn't, you know, get the opportunity to do a lot of this stuff partially because of my own product release schedule and partially because of delays in shipping the fabric. But, you know, I think next time I would really try to carve out some time to work on my own separate kind of marketing endeavors beyond what the company was planning and kind of expand on that with my own aesthetic vision rather than relying on the company for assets and for photos. I think that probably would have been time well spent.
Yeah. Well, and it's easy to say that after you've gone through it once, because where you start to see the holes. And not that there were holes necessarily, but you see where you can expand upon things. And and
it's always a learning experience.
Oh, yes. Every day. Sure. Every day is a learning experience.
Yeah.
Erin, how would you define success for you and your business?
You know, that is such an interesting question. I feel like I've always kind of struggled with this. I don't know if it's sort of a problem that's very typical for artists, or if it's, you know, something that comes from maybe self-esteem, but feeling successful is really kind of a moment by moment thing. I saw this little illustration or comic once that was sort of like the typical day of a designer or an artist. And it was sort of this little graph where the line goes up and down and up and down, there's hills and valleys, and the hills are like, oh, I'm a genius. This is great. Why isn't every moment like this? And the valleys are like, I'm worthless. This is garbage. Why am I even an artist? This is stupid. And I think that it's really focusing in on those successes and trying to like put the blinders on to the moments of despair or self-doubt that happen to every creative person. Mm-hmm. I think that the more I can trust those good moments of feeling like, man, that project really came out great. You know, I'm getting a lot of great feedback from a client. Oh, this product is selling really well. And like focus like a laser on those things and then try to tune out the feelings of, oh, you know, that didn't get the reception that I wanted. Oh, I'd never heard back from, you know, that pitch that I put out. Kind of just try to brush those things off and move on. That's helped me to feel more successful and mm-hmm. to kind of get the benefit of, oh, okay, things are working.
Right.
Success to me means freedom to do the type of creative work that I want to do. And I think that as long as I have that freedom to choose and to move forward on the projects that are interesting to me and to make decisions about the type of work I want to be doing, I'll feel successful. I'll feel happy about the work that I'm doing.
Oh, I love hearing that. That's great. Thank you. And also to your point about the valleys and peaks, I think I agree with you. I don't think it's just limited to artists. I feel like we're all our own worst critics, and we need to get ourselves out of that mindset and give ourselves more more credit for the amazing things we're doing. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, what advice would you give to somebody starting a product-based business?
Gosh, I mean, I think the biggest thing you should do before starting a business is establish your support network. And that's the thing that at any point in your business, you should be working on a support network. Right. And by that, I mean, who are the people that you can turn to for advice? Who are the people you can turn to when something has gone wrong in your business? Who are the people that you can turn to help guide you in making choices about the future of your business? That might be a mentor. That might be another business owner who's in the same stage of development as you are. That could be somebody in a different industry who has a little bit more experience and might have contacts that they want to help you with. That can look like a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. But I think having that network of folks that you can turn to who care about you and want to see you succeed is so vital. I wouldn't be even close to where I'm at with Cotton and Flax now if I didn't have the support of friends and my family and people in my industry who've been pulling me up all this time. Yes. I think that's, you know, nobody does anything alone. I think it's finding those people who, especially who really can kind of get your vision for what you want to do. Those people are so rare and so wonderful. And you should just hold on to them and treat them so kindly, because they're going to be a big part of the success of your business.
Oh, I love that. I just put out a mini episode a few weeks ago talking about gratitude for the people in my life that have helped to lift me up and have played such a huge part in making Trade Show Bootcamp what it is today. And I agree with you. That sense of community and having your inner circle of people that you can lean on is so valuable in entrepreneurship.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like, it turns out everything comes down to relationships. It's,
always.
You know, the strength of your work is always important to kind of keep pushing on that and come up with new and fresh and interesting ideas. But, you know, if you're no fun to work with and you have a bad attitude, it's like, that's always going to keep you behind. You really got to try and figure out ways to be a positive force in your community and to try to attract those like-minded folks to you.
Absolutely. I love that. Thank you. Well, where can people find you online if they want to check out your fabric or your other home goods?
Yeah, so my home decor business, Cotton and Flax, is online at cottonandflax.com. You can find me on all the different social places at Cotton and Flax. You're also welcome to check out my portfolio website, which is erindollar.com, and that's where I'm starting to catalog more of my pattern designs and kind of gives a more holistic look of everything that I do, whether it's teaching the product design stuff for Cotton and Flax or collaborations with other companies. It's kind of all there at this point. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, we will be sure to link those in the show notes for anyone that's interested in finding your products and learning more about you. So thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
It was fun. I enjoyed it a lot. Hey friends, a little fun fact for you today. Did you know that most of the brands that we interview here on this podcast are Trade Show Bootcamp alumni? Some of them are speakers and some are friends, but the large majority of the people I've talked to on this podcast are alumni. They have come through and attended our Paper Camp conference or our Paper Camp e-course. And both of these programs are aimed at helping stationery gift companies launch or refine their wholesale program. So we talk about everything from developing their product and ensuring it's ready for wholesale, to launching it to the market and working with sales reps, getting in front of buyers, and all the way down to exhibiting at trade shows, wholesale trade shows, similar to New York Now and the National Stationery Show. We cover it all because we want you to be educated and informed in how you're making decisions for your business. Now, many of you have been asking, when's the next program? When is Paper Camp going to run again? And I'm excited to tell you that we opened registration for our 2018 program. Paper Camp Conference is only going to run once in 2018, and the dates are March 1st and 2nd, and will be in Los Angeles. Historically, I've run this program twice a year for the last several years, but I'm cooking up some other fun things for the fall, so we are only going to offer Paper Camp in person and live one time in 2018. And if you want to get more information about how the live program compares with our e-course program, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp, and you can learn more and also grab your seat. Now, I should mention, like all of our Paper Camp conferences, this is an intimate event. We keep the numbers small so that you can get your questions answered and you can have time networking with our speakers as well as the other attendees. So seats are very limited and we sell out every time. And since we're only offering this once next year, I really encourage you to grab your seat if you intend on coming. More information is available at tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them up-level, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.